Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the Bald Face Truth.
I don't know about you, but sometimes I can tell just by looking my kids in the eyes. Normally, I can tell by looking them in the eyes whether they need a little tough love or they need a little boost, pick me up, pat on the back. Do they need some dad time? I can tell. Normally, they're standing in front of me. Sometimes they're holding a book. Sometimes they're shaking their head. They need something fixed. I'm like the engineer around here. I kind of feel like the fan base right now needs a little pick-me-up. And that's why yesterday when the Pac-12 conference announced that they had some new rapid testing protocols, I saw it largely as a positive development. Now you've heard Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner, the doctors have talked. A lot of people in the Southeastern Conference going, see, we told you you could do this. But ultimately today, I do have questions about this rapid testing and what it means to the Pac-12. But I also have questions about whether or not they can get this football season started early. Right? Ultimately, when I saw the news yesterday, one of the first things I thought was, could they play in November? Could they play in December? Is it possible that Ohio State could end up, after all, at Autzen Stadium if the Big Ten and the Pac-12 go, look, we're going to get back together. We're going to play these games. We all know we have a big hole in our budget when it comes to revenue. Buckeyes, Autzen Stadium. How about Saturday after Thanksgiving? Something like that to start the college football season in the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. I know I'm getting way ahead of myself, but part of my temptation today is not to pick apart the Pac-12 conference as they're trying to get started again. Do I have reasonable doubt that they will somehow muck up this process? Yes. Do they lack leadership at the commissioner level and in the headquarters in downtown San Francisco? I offer you yes. Were they a little evasive in talking about kind of the details yesterday? Some of this is confidential. They use the term research without really saying there's going to actually be a study. They just sort of threw out the term research yesterday. I have reasonable doubt. I have some questions for them, of course. But today, I want to focus on the idea that the college football season just got a little bit closer for us in our part of the country. I know the SEC is planning to play. I know the Big 12 is planning to play. I know the ACC is planning to play. I know there are some small colleges nationally, especially in the southern part of the United States, that are getting to play. But I also kind of feel like that in Pac-12 country, what we got was some good news. Ultimately, we got some news from the Pac-12 leadership team that said that rapid result testing is on the table. And I don't want to bore you to stitches with talk about antigens. I don't want to bore you to stitches with talk about, like, what, you know, the nuances of the test. What I heard bullet pointed was, hey, takes 15 minutes to test. The benefit of being able to rapidly test people is not just that we know that you are positive for COVID-19, but that we don't have to quarantine 30 other people on the team who have been in a meeting with you. That is a huge benefit. To be able to test rapidly, get a rapid result, and in 15 minutes know whether or not Joe McGee, the starting right guard, is positive or not. And by the way, they can catch the person before they begin to shed the virus, which means that you literally can draw a circle, or that contact tracing that becomes so complicated if you don't have rapid testing, you can literally isolate one player instead of having to isolate a position group or the offense. And suddenly now you've got some logistical breathing room. I feel like the Pac-12 conference, to steal a football euphemism because everybody seems to be using them, the Pac-12 conference was facing a third down and 15 from maybe inside their own 20, right? They're going to be punting. We're going to have their back against the end zone. And they just completed a nice post pattern, picked up 25 yards, and now they're sitting with the football out closer to midfield with a first down. They're still not anywhere near scoring position. They're not in the red zone, so to speak. But here we are in September facing the real possibility that Pac-12 football could happen. Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner, saying that he is reasonably certain or justifiably certain that the Pac-12 is going to play games in January. I kind of felt like that was a foregone conclusion. But telling Dan Patrick this morning nationally that it could happen sooner. We could be looking at December. I have been in contact with both players and coaches in the Pac-12. I've got to tell you, players who had scattered are now on high alert, saying that they believe that they may be summoned back to campus. I communicated with Noah Sewell's father, who was on the show earlier this week. Noah, as you know, linebacker at Oregon, is in Utah with his parents, and he's helping his dad coach his high school football team. And, Gabriel Sewell told me that he expects Oregon is going to summon his son back early. So that's good news. Mario Cristobal will be on Tuesday's show. I want you to be here for that. Also on Tuesday's show, I'm going to have Dr. Doug Aukerman, who is the doctor who you saw nationally be part of this discussion. He knows more about the testing than just about anybody. He'll be able to talk to us about the protocols. What are the steps for the Pac-12 getting back? Tuesday's show is going to be dynamite after the Monday Labor Day holiday. So I want you to be here on Tuesday. Make sure that you are here on Tuesday, as Mario Cristobal is going to be with us almost off the top of the show. He reached out to me unsolicited and said, let's do it, which told me that Mario Cristobal now knows that football season's back on. Literally. You know what he's been doing, Mario Cristobal? He says he's been in a space capsule. Not literally, but he feels like he's been in a space capsule. He said he's been eating peanut butter and energy bars. He's been watching game film. He has been going nuts. I'm telling you, I have felt like for weeks there's been something not quite right with Mario Cristobal. And I sensed that him being a little off related to the fact that this is a guy who was facing a college football season that, you know, was going to be interrupted, delayed, postponed, canceled, whatever. And Mario Cristobal is a guy that needs competition. I literally feel like he needs a race. He needs a fight. He needs a game. He needs a competition. Some people are wired that way. Some people need an event to rally around in the way that I wake up every day. I need this radio show at noon. I go, all right, I'm prepared. I'm in training. I'm warming up. It's a process for me to arrive here. And I run into people in the course of the morning and they go, gosh, you know, you're real quiet. I said, yeah, I'm not on at 8 a.m. I'm thinking, what's going to happen at noon? Who do I want on the show? Mario Cristobal is that way with a college football season, and you know how he's wired. You watch him before games, he's down there, he's smacking shoulder pads, he gets in the drill, he puts his hat on backwards, got a whistle. I've never seen a team warm up with such intensity. Oregon warms up like, you know, the game is actually, I've never seen people hit like that in the pregame. It's a little different. You don't always see that way. Mario Cristobal on Tuesday's show, because you know why? I think he knows he's got a season and that now he feels like there's some daylight. And I'm going to spin that positive today. Like, I could come on the show and I literally could say, look, we all have heard Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner, make promises before. And we have all seen the Pac-12 conference come forth with promises and momentum only to reverse course. And it could be true that the Pac-12 conference entire focus here by announcing the rapid result testing was sort of to quiet all the critics who were saying, oh, look at the Pac-12. They look stupid. They weren't ready. It was almost a PR propaganda announcement yesterday. Hey, look at us. We're going on the science and data, and we now have some new science and data. By the way, I am told that the campuses, the universities like Oregon and Oregon State, Colorado, Utah, Cal, Stanford, Arizona, Arizona State, Washington, Washington State, I'm told the campuses were caught off guard by the announcement yesterday. They did not know. They weren't told. Like you and I, they were informed late. So they're wrapping their heads around the idea, after furloughing and laying off people, that they may have games to put on, certainly in college basketball in the month of November, and maybe some college football in late November, early December. Keep an eye on it. Larry Scott telling media yesterday, hey, he's been in contact with the Big Ten Conference. Conference championship game, Rose Bowl, everything back on the table. Is the season opener possibly going to be Michigan at Washington, Ohio State at Oregon? Am I getting ahead of myself? Sure. Larry Scott, Pac-12 commissioner on the Dan Patrick Show, said essentially this could get them to play football in the fall. He's not ready to go all the way there yet, but this is what he said.
As it is now, you're not going to play fall football.
No, as it is now, we had made a decision several weeks ago.
And this doesn't change that.
It could. It doesn't yet. Again, we don't have government approvals yet.
Yeah.
But if we get government approvals and we can implement this testing, certainly we could. You know, basketball, it looks like the NCAA is going to change the start date of the basketball season from November 10th to probably November 25th or later. So that's probably the first decision we got to take. Can we revisit the decision not play basketball before January 1st and maybe start the season at the same date or close to when the rest of the country is?
There it is, Larry Scott, Pac-12 commissioner. This could get us to play fall football, but not yet. He cited the governmental controls, and he's right there. There are currently six universities out of the 12 Pac-12 schools that are located in states that have restrictions, including Oregon and Oregon State, Washington and Washington State, and the two California schools. The four California schools, there are all various restrictions, but you have essentially Oregon, Oregon State, and the four California schools so that they can't have anything to do at all. In the state of Washington, they can have some limited practices in small amounts. And Oregon, of course, they're getting out onto the field in small groups and players are allowed to work out, but you don't have full practices. So Larry Scott's right there, but I think he's dodging the question, and it doesn't drive anybody else crazy that you hear him essentially resorting to PR speech and a political position of let's parse our words instead of just answering the damn question. Does this mean football could be played in the fall or not?
If the test goes well, is the Pac-12 in business playing football this fall?
I believe we will be. Whether it's in the fall or January 1st remains to be seen. You know, this isn't unfortunately our only challenge. We've got six schools currently, Dan. The four California schools, UCLA, USC, Stanford, and Cal, and two of our Oregon schools, Oregon and Oregon State, that don't currently have government approvals to have contact practice. I know the approvals have been given for pro sports, but not for college sports. So we'll need some help from the county's public health officials to bless this and say it's okay. Now, I think what we announced yesterday is going to be an important piece of that. I think the public health officials are keenly interested in what our plans and protocols are. So I'm hopeful that we will get what we need.
Again, what is he saying there? Judah Newby, what is he saying there? Is football going to be played in the fall? Is it not going to be played in the fall? You know, he's kind of sidestepping. Why doesn't he just say, look, this is a first step. We'd love to play in the fall, Dan. We're going to move towards that, but we always have January.
Look, I'm all for, normally I'm definitely, I'll take, put the magnifying glass on Larry Scott and find the ways to critique him. I actually think he did really well in the appearance today on Dan Patrick. It's messy, and there is no clear directive that he can take. Right now, he is got the Pac-12 in a good position. It's a good thing to have this testing partnership. It does move the conference one step closer, but he can't say definitively quite yet that we will be able to have fall football. So,
but what is he saying? Let me stop you there.
Yeah.
You're a media member. Tell me what he's saying
here. If the test goes well, is the Pac-12 in business playing football this fall?
I believe we will be. Whether it's in the fall or January 1st remains to be seen. You know, this isn't...
What is he saying?
I think he thinks we're going to play football this fall, but he can't. His position doesn't allow him to say it definitively yet. But I
then say that. Then say that. Say, look, I think we might be able to play in the fall, but we need more data. We need more testing, and we need the state on board. And I think we can possibly get there, but we have January 1 as a fallback. But instead, it's, you know, maybe, call me maybe. I don't know.
As it is now, you're not going to play fall football.
No, as it is now, we had made a decision several weeks ago.
And this doesn't change that.
It could. It doesn't yet. Again, we don't have government approvals yet.
Yeah.
But if we get the government approvals and we can implement this testing, certainly we could. Basketball, it looks like the NCAA is going to change the start date of the basketball season from November 10th to probably November 25th or later. So that's probably the first decision we got to take.
All right. So here's another question I have. If basketball can play November 25th, why can't football play December 1st?
Right. And that's, you know, that's part of his PR strategy of deflecting to the basketball conversation. I don't know why basketball has to be the first decision they make. Football really should be the first decision to make. I think football is the first decision that they're going to make, but he's publicly kind of deflecting away from that. That I do take a little bit of issue with. He is redirecting the conversation away. But I think in his heart of hearts, Larry thinks that we're going to be playing football. But it all goes back to the decision they made 3 weeks ago. With the amount of definitiveness that they had, that's what puts him in a tough position here, because he doesn't want to take away from the importance of the decision they made 3 weeks ago. But the fact of the matter is, it was too soon to make that decision. And now it puts him in a no-win situation.
Amen. They boxed themselves in.
Right.
And they did it in like a five-day span. I think the first mistake they made was announcing the 10-game conference schedule the way they did. They rolled it out on that Friday. They announced it, and the start date of that 10-game schedule, while they spaced it out and gave themselves some flexibility later in the year, the start date was too soon for them. Like, you know, if they would have been much better off going, look, we need to buy ourselves two or three more Saturday weekends. Let's push it back. Let's not make any decision on the season. But they set a definitive start date when it was almost like setting a deadline that you knew you couldn't make. And then they came out 5 days later and said, we got to postpone the season because it's not going to work. When you're right, they should have just said, hey, look, we're moving the whole schedule back a month. And then we're going to float it down the river as necessary. And if we end up in January, we end up in January. Now, I know the presidents didn't want that limbo. I also feel like the Pac-12, We Are United movement played a role in this, because I think the presidents were a little leery of litigation. Bad PR. Are we rushing to get on the field? We're not the SEC. We're not unhinged. We're supposed to be the Pac-12. We're research institutions. I want more of your phone calls. I'll play more of Larry Scott. We'll talk about his performance and his appearance. I felt like he did better yesterday in the conference call than he did on the Dan Patrick show today. But I also know this guy is not the best spokesperson for the Pac-12. I think Michael Schill at Oregon would have been better served to jump on the Dan Patrick show and have a thoughtful conversation about, you know, the realities of the Pac-12. I want your phone calls. 503-417-7575. What do you make of the whole thing? You tell me. Tuesday's show, Mario Cristobal, Oregon Ducks football coach. I take that as a good sign. Dr. Aukerman, the doctor at Oregon State, the good doctor, will be on the show. I had him as one of my 25 most influential people in the state of Oregon when it came to sports. He will be on Tuesday's show to talk about this rapid result testing protocol. What does it mean? What do they mean by research? Look, Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner, and his appearance today on the Dan Patrick show, I thought he mostly stuck to his talking points. I think there are a lot of people that want to, and I think as a journalist, my inclination yesterday was to kind of be like, all right, I want to be reticent here. I want to be skeptical that they're going to be able to pull this off. But what I see and the questions that I'm getting now and the scuttlebutt that I am hearing with players and coaches is that yesterday they made an announcement. The university athletic departments did not see this coming. They had no heads up. And the Pac-12 conference announced that they had rapid results testing that would be available by the end of the month that would give the universities the ability in 15 minutes to tell you if you have coronavirus or not. And that allows them then to, you know, avoid the burden of heavy contact tracing, right? Where you see entire position groups that are either testing positive or quarantined. And I would think, and why I call BS on the commissioner with his comment about, you know, basketball being able to be played in late November. He floated out November 25th. And why I think that that is an issue is because I believe in college basketball, where you have 12 or 15 real key members of your team, having one or two or three players that you'd have to quarantine or have positive tests for is a huge blow to a lineup. You know, talk about going out and trying to play a game with eight players. In football, where you have now the ability, if there is a player who has a positive test on a Thursday, you have the ability to very quickly remove that person from the locker room and quarantine that person and know that you have isolated the possible spread of the virus. I think football is much more feasible. If they can play football in late November, I think they can. I think that basketball, football, everything will be on the table, along with your Thanksgiving turkey. On the Dan Patrick Show, Larry Scott, Pac-12 commissioner, talked about the steps. Keep in mind, this is one step. I said they converted a third and 15. They're out near the 40 now.
So there's been a sense we've had, and we've been, you know, on one end of the spectrum here, that there's a moral and ethical responsibility for students to not put them in more harm's way than they'd be in otherwise. And by being able to test a student athlete every day before they go into practice or game, we can have a high degree of confidence that no one in practice or a game has the coronavirus and could spread it. So this is an important step in the path to us reconsidering resumption of play.
Yeah, I was watching a college football game last night, and I don't know if you noticed this, but you know, the officials in the games were wearing masks. That confused me. I was very confused by this because I thought to myself, are they not testing? Are they not testing on a regular basis? Like, what is going on with the officials having to wear a mask on the field? And I think the more, look, you're never going to arrive at a place where you have 100% certainty that everybody who's inside the stadium, everybody who's near the field is coronavirus free. But if you can do this test and within 15 minutes know that if somebody is, you know, positive for the test, and by the way, it would catch from the doctor's comments yesterday, Dr. Harmon, who was on the call yesterday, said that it would allow you to find the positive tests before the athletes even begin to shed the virus, which I think means that presumably, like, this isn't just about football. This now becomes about getting students safely back onto campuses, and if it's cost effective enough, can you duplicate that in a dorm? Can you duplicate that on campus? Can you put a fence around campus and say, look, as you come into campus each day, or if you're on campus each day and you're going into a campus facility, you get the 15-minute test. Presumably, you could have students on campus in person. Now, they're already doing this in some parts of the country where they're saying, hey, students are already on campus. I think the Pac-12's on record as, look, we're not going to put students in a bad position. The second step, though, then becomes a local and state government restriction question. Can you then have Governor Kate Brown release sort of the recommendations or the phase one, phase two, phase three protocols that exist currently in Lane County and in Benton County and say college football teams and college basketball teams, all bets are off. You're getting rapid result testing. As long as you're inside that, so to speak, bubble, you are allowed to get on the field and you can have 80 football players in a team meeting somewhere. So that is another question. I just feel like ultimately I could spend some time today just kind of nitpicking the whole thing and saying this is unlikely. It's propaganda. Why would they release this so soon? They don't have the research. They don't have the data. And by the way, what was with all the confidential? That's confidential. This is confidential banter yesterday. But instead of taking that tactic, I'm just looking at it from 20,000 feet and I'm going, we are, if this is a football game, I think they're at about first and 10 from their own 40 now. And I think they were third and 15 from their own 15 just a play ago. Judah Newby, where's the ball and what's the down and distance?
Yeah, it's midfield. I think that was a third down conversion. That's nicely said. I don't think it's the Mahomes to Hill third and 15 fourth quarter conversion to win the Super Bowl. But it's a good third down conversion early in the second half. Things are messy. You know, everything is not clean cut. But I couldn't help but be encouraged. You wrote in your column, this is hope. It really is. It is hope. It is a step in the right direction. And, John, as much as it doesn't necessarily pain me to say this, but I don't love Larry Scott. But there's a version of this where if Larry's right, he just saved his job. He saved his job and he saved his reputation. If he's right with this, there's a version of this, but if the partnership works out, daily testing works out, rapid result testing works out, Pac-12 plays football, Big Ten plays football, and if Larry's also positing, this can have a societal effect as well. If he's right, I'm not saying there's any chance that he is, but if he is.
You're giving him credit as though he brought the idea. This was an idea that the Pac-12 had created a grant. The doctors were heavily involved. They were already researching, testing. The CEO group had given that direction. Larry Scott right now, and I think why he's so formulaic in his responses in the news conference and on the Dan Patrick show, I think he is bullet pointed and he's very carefully sticking to his talking points because he's essentially been reduced to a spokesperson in this equation. The doctors have become far louder, voices in the room. Michael Schill, the CEO group president is the head of the CEO group is a much more influential figure in this. I just don't think there's any saving him. And I thought Greg Hansen of the Arizona Daily Star wrote it well this week when he just said, Larry's done. He's cooked. It's a square peg in a round hole. I do think they're going to have to move on from Larry Scott regardless. I also wonder, let's just say, they do play these games in December. Let's say they are able to move it up. It is a smashing success. They just laid off 88 people. How are they going to do this? They going to hire everybody back? Are those people going to come back? Who's going to work the games? I'm left going, who's going to work the games? But let's talk to Nick Daschle of the Oregonian. He's coming up next. I'll ask him what he thinks. When will the Pac-12 play a football game? That's all I want to know. Nick Daschle of the Oregonian covers Oregon State. When will we be at a Pac-12 football game, Daschle?
That's like the number one question right now, isn't it? I mean, yesterday certainly, at least I think January 10th is certainly possible now after yesterday, but I was way up in the air before yesterday's announcement. I don't know. I mean, I like to see how this testing goes, when they start in late September and see how that goes. And if it looks, if it starts showing results, I don't know why they wouldn't be able to start, a training camp later in October and maybe get going, toward Thanksgiving or a little bit after that. I sort of laid out a schedule a little bit on Twitter yesterday just for kicks and giggles, just won an 8-game schedule. I thought you could start, play first 3 weeks of December, then take a break for Christmas, and then play the 5 Saturdays in January, and then maybe have a championship game and some bowl games after the Super Bowl. An 8-game schedule, I don't know. I think they'd probably like to play 10, but I think December's a possibility. I think it's more likely after the first of the year, though.
Yeah, let's focus on the positives for a second. I'll bullet point them. You tell me if you see it the same way. Rapid testing is good. Obviously, you can control the outbreaks and the spread of the virus if you can detect it earlier. That's all positive. The Pac-12, is hopeful that they are going to play some football games. Reasonably certain that they'll have games at least in January, if not before. Kind of wait and see on the research, but this is all very exciting. You see any other positives I'm missing there?
No, I think the testing is the big is the big piece of this thing. If they can keep the spread to a minimum with daily testing, I think that's big. Since March, we've been hit by curveball after curveball, so I'm sure there's going to be some things coming up. I'm reading stories today about big outbreaks at Arizona and Arizona State right now, and later this month, students are going to be showing up at Oregon State. You know what? I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be interesting to see how things shake out when students start showing up. But in fact, I've got a story coming about. I talked to several players and Jonathan about that subject, about when students actually do show up, what are they going to do? So I'll have something on that probably Monday. But that's one that we don't know until, they're around students.
We're talking to Nick Daschle of the Oregonian. If I am being logical here, I hear the commissioner talking about the NCAA possibly clearing basketball to start on November 25th. Of course, there's some state hurdles to pass through for some of the Pac-12 schools. But if basketball is starting on the 25th of November, what's stopping football from getting going in possibly earlier mid-December?
Well, obviously football is just a bigger animal. There's far more players and more moving pieces and all that stuff. But the one thing I am a little curious, though, why basketball is getting the, early start. It is an indoor sport, and everything I've read, it's the indoor stuff that is more concerning when it comes to COVID than outdoor stuff. So I'm a little interested to find out how they're going to pull off basketball before football. But yeah, I think the football thing is simply it's got 10 times the moving pieces that basketball does.
The negatives here, if we're nitpicking the conference, it's possible that they just, they're so early in this that they just don't know what's going to happen. They don't know what they're going to learn. I heard him talk about research. What did you think they meant by research? Because I didn't hear any talk about a blind study. It seems like it's just more of a casual use of the word.
Well, exactly. It's hard to believe the Pac-12 is at the forefront of testing on this thing. There's so many businesses and around the country and the government and whatnot looking for that, that breakthrough on testing. It's hard to believe the Pac-12 has already figured it out. So there's got to be some testing done, in the interim to see if this works. But I don't know why these schools and conferences are so, they want to keep everything under wraps so much. Larry yesterday was just, this is confidential and this is confidential. And I just think it'd be better if they started releasing a few more bits of data, the details on cost and, the outbreaks and all those things. Why we have to claw through public records requests all the time to get all this information is kind of ridiculous to me.
Nick Daschle of the Oregonian with us. I want to spin this positive. I want them to play college football games. I think that would be a big sign that, life is kind of moving along. It also fills a huge hole in the budget. How tempted will the athletic departments be to play 10 games? And is there a possibility in your mind that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 could come together to have, hey, we're going to play a non-conference game. Ohio State will go to Oregon still. Washington will go to play against Michigan like they were scheduled to do. And, hey, Oregon State, you'll play Iowa. You know, like, is there a possibility we get some flavor that we didn't have before?
Possible, but, I mean, if you play that non-conference game, you would think it's going to be at the start, and do you really want to take a lot of chances on travel and things like that right at the start of this thing? I guess it's possible because in some of these other conferences you would assume to play a number of games. I don't know. Is Oregon going to be all that fired up about playing Ohio State at home with no fans? I think that's a game where they want to make some money on it and have their fans there. So if there's some way to push that off a little bit, I think that's one they would look for. I kind of like better that they find a way to play that non-conference game at the end where, you know, they match up, you know, not really calling them bowl games, but maybe your best of the Big Ten plays the best in the Pac-12 and the Rose Bowl, and then, you know, your 2-2 somewhere, and maybe go down to the 6th or 7th and 8th best teams and just match them up that way. And maybe that's – because by then, I mean, you should have a pretty good handle on how things are working. And I think that's probably more realistic than playing one right at the outset.
I love that idea. And I think it creates some natural bowl games. It, you know, obviously you get a, you know, you get a pseudo Rose Bowl at the end for the conference champion and from each of the conferences. So I think I love that idea, Dashiell. You know, you got a chance to talk to Jonathan Smith. I thought you had a great story on sort of the business and the politics and it's kind of the stuff outside football that Oregon State's doing. What can you share with the listeners and what were your big takeaways in talking to Coach Smith?
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty open about you know, wanting to take this time and, you know, and build a better individual. And, you know, there's a real movement with this with the election, and, you know, and that's just not football at Oregon. It's all the sports. They're really trying to get these guys looking at getting registered and at least getting up to speed on, you know, who's running and what the options are. But Jonathan said he wanted to bring in some, you know, a couple of people that, you know, could talk to the players about, you know, what does a senator do? What does a representative do? What does the president do? What is a lot of these bigger offices. So they at least have a working knowledge of who, you know, who they're voting for when they vote for somebody, you know, how will this guy impact my life if I vote for him and he wins? And then, you know, I also like the fact that he wanted to do some financial literacy stuff with these guys because, I mean, I think a lot, I mean, I look at my kids and, I mean, there's a lot of stuff they just don't know that I just felt like when I was their age, it was like second nature to me, but I don't know how many of these kids know a lot of the financial stuff. And so I think that's good that they're trying to teach them a few basic things, you know, once they're out of college and how to deal with money.
Did you get the idea, the impression that Jonathan Smith is chomping at the bit to play a game or just waiting to see the schedule so that he can get more organized? Or what is his sort of mindset or temperament that you can gauge? You've been around him enough to know him during season, during off season.
Well, I think you're shortchanging any coach to say that they wouldn't be chomping at the bit to play right now. I mean, Oregon State was supposed to play a game last night. That's what they live for. So, I mean, all these coaches are in that situation. But I got the impression that he's kind of taking this as in a measured way. He's looking at, okay, we're not going to be able to play for a while, so how can I make myself better? How can I make my team better? He talked about that a lot with, you know, how he wants to watch some of these SEC and Big 12 and Big 10 games, and then he wants to call or text some of his coaching friends in those conferences and kind of pick their brain as to, you know, how did you deal with the camp? How did you looking at schemes, and hey, he's trying to learn some stuff from this, and you know, maybe in the long run, he'll build a better mousetrap out of it. But yeah, I mean, shoot, of course he wants to play, but I don't get the impression that he's you know, that he's just pulling his hair out, you know, going, I wish we were playing. I just suck. I do not get that impression at all.
Nick Daschle of the Oregonian is with us. All right. The big, you know, obviously when we look at it from the standpoint of fans and we look at it from the standpoint of coaches, it, you know, everybody wants games. Everybody wants players safe. From a media perspective, if we can get a little inside baseball, how much different is your job when there is the actual season on paper, rhythm to the season, games being played? How has this sort of changed your approach?
Well, I mean, as far as a season, when they do come up with one, you know, that part we'll just have to find out how much access we get. But I mean, right now, it just kind of forces you to be a little more creative, and you know, you need to you're spending all your time on the phone pretty much because you don't. I have not talked to anybody, you know, face to face at Oregon State since March, and. You know, some people might be okay for them. I personally like to, you know, talk to people face to face. I just feel like I get better things out of them in the long run. But I'm hopeful that at some point I'll be able to talk to them face to face. But I think if they do have a season, you know, it's going to be a lot of Zoom calls and still phone calls. I don't think we're going to see a lot of practice and things like that. So we just have. You have to get better at asking questions because, you know, coaches and players aren't just going to offer stuff up to you. You know, if you can't see it, you gotta hope you can pull it out of them.
Nick Daschle of the Oregonian, read him on Oregon Live. Daschle, I appreciate you making time for us. Thank you.
All right, we'll see you.
There he is, Nick Daschle. Hey, by the way, Daschle, you still there?
Yeah.
I got another question for you. It's a little off topic. Can we talk about your issue with the quarter promotion?
The one last week?
Yes.
Yeah, though.
Can we talk about that? I mean, can we go public with that?
Yeah, well, I mean most people know about the situation with coins, you know, there's a shortage of coins out there cuz the U.S. Mint shut down during the pandemic, and there just hasn't been a lot of movement of coins. And so a lot of people are short of coins. In a laundromat, you know, it's kind of how we traffic is either card payments or quarters. And so, you know, I've kept a pretty good supply of quarters on hand to, you know, weather the storm. And I've done pretty well. And then last week I go to fill my bill changer and I've noticed, I'm down a little bit. I didn't give much thought to it, and then I went a few days later and tried to fill it up again. I was down over half of my quarter supply. I'm not going to say how many quarters, but it was substantial. It was odd, and so I started asking around, and I found out the casino up the road, A&A Casino, was offering a promotion to people where if they brought in as much as $200 in quarters, they would, or in coin, but mostly quarters, they would give them the, you know, a like amount in cash and then offer them and then match that amount with another, you know, with a promotional dollar. So if you brought in $200, you get $200 in cash and $200 in promotional credit. Well, people were coming in and just emptying out my bill changer and getting quarters and hauling them up to the A&A. And I went up there and it wasn't a super pleasant conversation because I was ticked but they said that they'll never do that again because so many people, they had so much coin up there they didn't know what to do with it all. I said, well, duh, they're cleaning out all the businesses down here, that's where all your coin's coming from. So but I think that's because that promotion's over, so I think I'm okay now. I'm not where I used to be, but I'm okay. But had that gone on much longer,
Did they just give you like a big bag of quarters, or what? You had to change it out, or what happened?
Well, they gave me not. They were gonna do something. They were gonna call me, and they never did. But I had enough just to get by. And then I'm gonna my credit union that I work with. They're gonna I'm gonna buy a bunch of quarters from them eventually. But yeah, it was a little hairy for. I thought you wanted to ask me about my ant problem.
Oh, no, no. Hey, can you talk about the ant problem on the other side of the break?
Yeah. I'm going to send you a picture in between the break so you can see something.
All right. You hold. I'm going to ask you because you have an ant problem unlike anything else. He'll talk about it on the other side. All right, Nick Daschle finishing up our interview that is unlike any other interview we've ever done. He's now talking about his ant problem. What happened? You sent me a picture. It's a bunch of sheetrock. You got an ant problem.
Yeah, well, there's these ants called red velvet ants. They hang out in trees, and we have a lot of trees around our house, and they apparently found a runway from the onto the deck and the roof, and they got into our roof and just tore it up something fierce. That pile I sent you was like 5 days worth of sheetrock, and there's probably two or three cups of just ground up sheetrock in the closet right now. The guy came out this morning and he said, "I've never seen anything like that." His mouth just dropped to the ground. So he came out of the plane. He's going to drill holes in our ceiling and inject it with stuff. He's doing like three or four treatments, and he swears he's going to take care of the problem. But
I've never seen anything like this. All right, we got to go to break. Daschle, I appreciate you. Leave it right here.
Hey, it's Canzano. We'll get you back to the podcast in a moment. It's brought to you by Shoe Mill. Go to shoemill.com or any of the Portland or Salem locations if you want to see great shoes. A while back, I picked up my first pair of Kizik's at Shoe Mill, and it's changed how I think about shoes. Kizik's are the shoes you literally pop on without bending over. No lace-up required. Their patented heel technology collapses and rebounds, and it secures the shoes to your feet. I've been sporting mine for about a year. They're the most comfortable and convenient shoes I've ever had. They're available for both men and women. Experience hands-free shoes for yourself at any of the Portland area Shoe Mill stores. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet. Now back to the podcast.
BFFT. Live from the home studios, presented by High Caliber Millwrights. Here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Alabama Adriana, part of this show for a few years now. What are you doing this weekend? Let us live vicariously through you. What are you doing? Give us something exciting.
I am going to Saturday Market for my first time.
What are you going to do there?
I don't.
Patchouli oil? What are you getting?
I don't know what people do there. Don't you just walk around?
Judah, what do you do at a Saturday Market?
Yeah, you walk around primarily. You kind of have an air of sophistication about you a little bit. And maybe bring a pipe could be good.
A pipe?
Your best cardigan.
Maybe, cardigan?
Yeah.
Maybe, and a pipe?
It is a fall thing, right? It's a fall kind of park blocks type of thing. Is this on the park blocks, right?
Well, no. Well, okay, there is one on the park blocks, but that one ends really early.
Oh,
it ends like, I think it's from like 10 to like noon or something. And the person I'm going with is more available in the afternoon. And so there's one close to Burnside that is going until about 5.
Well, scrap what I said. You're going to go tank top and shorts for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a different part of the day. So, yeah.
Different part of the day, different part of the town.
Yeah, completely different vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Context really matters with this stuff.
You got to dress bohemian if you're going to go down there. You got to wear, like, you know, a flowing outfit.
Yeah, I'll wear a sundress, one of my summer outfits, since I haven't had anything else to do.
I don't know about you guys, but I am clinging with two hands to summer. I am not letting it go yet. And if these schools are going to make us distance learn, like my wife is all stressed out right now about the start of the school year next week, and I'm like, it's Labor Day weekend.
Mm.
We're going to have a great weekend. This is going to be awesome. It's still summer, right? Until September 21st. Isn't it summertime, technically, like on the calendar? So I'm holding on to summer with two hands. And she is going, we have so much work to do. And I'm like, really? Like, if we're going to do this distance learning thing to start the year like everybody else, then, of course, that falls on her, so I shouldn't begrudge it. But it's like, because I'm doing a radio show where the kids are learning. But she's like, we got to get the kids on their schedules again. We got to do this. And that is a very much a parent thing. And I got to be honest, like the parents out there that are facing the start of the school year who have parents who have to go to a physical location to work, I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't. I'm working from home. I'm doing the radio show from home. I'm writing columns from home. And, you know, we're all here. And I have a lot of friends who are unfortunately, they have to go to an office or they work, you know, and they're out moving around the city while they're working. And I feel for those families that are facing that. So I'm, you know, while I'm not technically in it with you, I am thinking of you and I am going, okay, what are you going to do? How are you going to get through this? I think it's going to be a lot of, it's going to be a big challenge for a lot of people. So I am thinking about kind of what the Pac-12 is doing with rapid result testing. And I'm thinking, gosh, like there's more application to this than just football. If you can pull this off and if colleges can do it with students and if schools ultimately can do it with kids, we sort of eliminate the widespread super spreader events that everybody's afraid of. Like I don't hear a lot of people going, you know, I'm afraid my kids are going to go to school and they're going to get coronavirus and that, you know, something bad's going to, I hear people saying, you know, it's more teachers, it's relatives, it's the grandparents who take care of the kids. And I don't know about you. I have on occasion picked my kids up from elementary school. There's a ton of grandparents out there picking up kids from school. So I get why people are a little anxious about kids being in school, but I'm curious to see as this moves forward how it all plays out. All right, Punch It Audio. We do it every day on the show. It is the best sound from all around.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio,
presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Former University of Oregon quarterback Marcus Mariota in his first season with the Raiders. Mike Mayock is the general manager of the Raiders. He spoke about how Marcus Mariota fits on that Raiders roster. Punch it.
I think if you want to be a good football team, there's an argument to be made that you're only as good as your backup quarterback. You're one snap away, and you're putting everybody at risk if there's a drastic reduction in talent, putting the whole franchise at risk. So we are believers in Derek Carr. We think Derek's taking another step with John this year. And so I feel like Derek's taking that next step, and I wanted to see. And we also felt like John and I had a comfort level with Marcus Mariota because of what we did when we were both in television. We had him ranked in all the reps and time we spent with him. So we kind of felt like, hey, he brings a little bit different style to the table. You know, he's a little bit more of a guy who can use his legs, scramble around, you can run some different zone read stuff with them. You can do different things with Marcus. So we kind of feel like not only are we getting a quality guy that can come in and play if Derek gets hurt, but he also brings a different dimension to our offense.
And here's the thing that's not being said, and you know it and I know it, but Marcus Mariota is not going to be a problem if he is relegated to being a backup for a part or all of this season. Now, I'm not convinced that Derek Carr has taken that step forward that Mike Mayock's talking about. I'll believe it when I see it. But I also think there's a reason they went out and got Marcus Mariota. They were nervous about Carr last season, the trajectory. Does he fit? Can John Gruden and Derek Carr be, you know, a happy relationship? Or do you need to get somebody who's a better fit? I think Mariota is a good fit in that way. I think he will be a team first guy. I think he was in an incredibly difficult situation in Tennessee where it didn't work out. But I will not be the least bit surprised if and when Derek Carr slips up or gets hurt that Marcus Mariota is ready, waiting, and will be successful. I think he's an NFL starter, and I think the Raiders have a good 1-2 combination. Nuggets, Clippers. What a game for the Clippers. Mike Malone, Nuggets coach, talked about a big game one loss. Clippers blew him out. Here's Malone. Punch it.
You can game plan all you want, but you have to be able to guard one-on-one. We gave up 15 blow-bys because guarding one-on-one and getting blown by off the dribble, which led to, I think, 29 points. And they lived in our paint, scored 66.
Denver was coming off of a emotional, hard-fought seven-game series with the Utah Jazz. They encounter a Clippers team that's just locked in. I think the Clippers are the best team in the NBA. Charles Barkley calling sweep.
Come on, Chuck, guarantee it. Drew Marshall, guarantee. Guarantee. 4-0. Strike one, strike two, strike three, strike four. Guarantee.
We haven't seen that or heard the guarantee for a while. Let's take a break.
Charles Barkley also had the Blazers sweeping the Lakers. I think this one's got a lot more clout to it. Clippers are the best team. Are the Nuggets just happy to be in this series? I think it's an important question. Kyle Lowry took a shot below the belt, finished the game after getting hit below the belt. He had this to say. Punch it.
I mean, obviously, I got balls of steel. That's one. Two, just trying to win the game. That's where you find the energy at. And, you know, that's what that was, just trying to win the game. No gas at all. My balls are still, and just win.
There it was. By the way, he's having a lot of fun. And the Eastern Conference is more fun in general than I thought it would be. You've got Toronto, you've got Boston, Milwaukee and the Miami. That series is compelling. I still think it's going to probably be Boston. But if you are any interest at all interested in the NBA, what we're getting are, by and large, close games. Great finish to that game last night. And Kyle Lowry with the shot below the belt. Larry Scott, Pac-12 commissioner, was on the Dan Patrick Show this morning. He says that rapid result testing is a step towards the resumption of play. Well, no kidding. But here's the Pac-12 commissioner punching.
There's been a sense we've had, and we've been, you know, on one end of the spectrum here, that there's a moral and ethical responsibility for students to not put them in more harm's way than they'd be in otherwise. And by being able to test a student athlete every day before they go into practice or game, we can have a high degree of confidence that no one in practice or a game has the coronavirus and could spread it. So this is an important step in the path to us reconsidering resumption of play.
I'm optimistic that the Pac-12 is going to play. I don't see why, though, they can't start to at least think about playing a game in December. If they're going to try to play college basketball indoors with smaller roster sizes, and I do think that there's a bigger risk when you have the small roster size of, hey, if you have an outbreak, suddenly you have three or four players on a team that's out, you're forfeiting games. And the same, I don't think, holds up in college football where, you know, you could have some more depth with rapid testing, too. You could isolate and avoid sort of the burden and the stress of contact tracing because you could isolate those positive tests rather quickly. But I think they should be talking about and thinking about football in early December. I don't get the point of waiting until January. I am spinning this positive, but I have questions about it, of course. It is a little vague. There were a few too many references to confidentiality for my taste. If the Pac-12 universities that are public universities by and large, except aside from Stanford and USC, if they're footing the bill for this thing, I do think that you have to be transparent. And by the way, how much confidence can we have that they're going to share the test results with the public? Will we have confidence in what they're doing? I don't know. But it is a step in the right direction. It is a positive step. That's Punch It Audio. It is the best sound from all around. Real winner in this pandemic, I'll keep saying it, the real winner is the NBA. These games are all close, except for the Clippers-Nuggets game one. Games were close, and it's compelling, and they have done a really nice job of keeping people healthy. And so I think ultimately, if you are a NBA fan, you're probably happy with that. And if you're somebody who's just looking for a sports league that's getting it right, the NBA, which has done so many things wrong over maybe the last decade, 15 years. They're, you know, we could take issue with their officiating. We could take issue with the fact that their drug testing policy is kind of a farce. They lie about attendance. They have the Donald Sterling, embarrassment with the Clippers that they had to overcome. Tim Donaghy, they had to overcome. The Sonics being ripped out of Seattle, they had to overcome. And I look at this and I go, you know what? They're kind of shining. Like, if as a stock right now, I'm not going to say they're Tesla, but they're emerging. Certainly have pulled in front of Major League Baseball with the trend of doing things right. All right, coming up, we will talk with Devon Pouncey of the Wake Up and Win podcast. We also will get a visit from Anna, but I'll talk to you too about what Patrick Mahomes, Conor McGregor, Dog the Bounty Hunter, and Heather Locklear all have in common and much more. Leave it here. Coming up, Devon Pouncey, former college basketball player, media member, man of the world, host of the podcast Wake Up and Win, will be joining us. Judah Newby, Patrick Mahomes, Conor McGregor, Dog the Bounty Hunter, Heather Locklear. What do they all have in common?
So I really did my best not to look anything up on this question. So this is a guess, but I did see that Mahomes got engaged this week, so I'm going to go with they've all gotten engaged this year during the pandemic. Could be completely wrong.
That would be correct.
Oh,
they all got engaged. Mahomes,
nice.
Mahomes, McGregor, Dog the Bounty Hunter got engaged. Heather Locklear, I didn't know she was on the market.
Neither did I.
Would you have got that right, Alabama Adriana?
No, I was going to guess a vacation home in Florida.
I like that. Which of those engagements are you guys most interested in?
Wait, can you remind me why Dog the Bounty Hunter is a thing? I kind of don't know who that is.
He had that show where he would go and, like, isn't it if your car gets too many tickets, you, like, and then,
yeah,
I don't know, and then it gets
towed. He was a
bounty
hunter. Yeah, he's a bounty hunter. If there's a warrant out for you or whatever, he would come and... Dwayne Chapman, man.
I was way off.
He'd come and he'd get you arrested. He's a bounty hunter. Yeah, if your car gets impounded, that too, he'd probably come after you.
Oh, so I'm seeing he had a wife pass away a few years ago, according to the interweb. So he's engaged this week. Wow, okay.
I'm most intrigued to see who is engaged to Conor McGregor because that is one...
Good luck.
Yeah, that person has a lot to deal with.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
I mean, we all know his personality. Like, I can't imagine that 24/7, like, cuffed to that forever. That's crazy.
Yeah, I kind of look at that one and I go... Is he like that all the time? Like, do you guys think that Conor McGregor is in character, or is he like, you know what I mean? Is he like this at home?
I came back for the love of this, to come and shoot this man up. A little rat, a little weasel, a little hard man in groups. I've met many of them through my years. A man who grows in numbers, but on his own, and when confronted in a similar situation, cowers away. And that's what you saw with that little on the bus over there.
That's how he's talking to the neighborhood, the paper boy in the neighborhood.
Yeah. I hope for his fiance's sake that he's in character, but I still feel like there's a level of, like, a little hint of mental health, you know, that it needs to be dealt with, or that I guess is just going to be their life now.
I am very, very well coached. We are ready here. We are ready for war. We are ready for all outcomes, all situations, all scenarios. Supreme supreme confidence you were looking at here. So we're going to go out and enjoy this contest on October 6th. Because again, that's all I'm doing it for. Because I love it. Don't have to deal with what I was. It's just because I love it.
That's him at the engagement party. That's talking right. about the actual wedding going on. Which wedding would you want to go to? Because I would like to be at the Heather Locklear wedding.
Why?
That's the one I would go to.
Why is that?
Just because, you know, anybody who grew up, we're talking about like 80s and 90s stars. This is like, you know, Amanda from Melrose Place. You know, this is the Heather Locklear was like a star when you talk about, you know, 1980, 85, 86. She married Tommy Lee and Richie Sambora, for crying out loud. I think I would like to be at that wedding. I think it would be an interesting crowd. T.J. Hooker, like, you know what I mean? Is William Shatner still alive? He might be at this wedding. Yeah, he's still alive. He might be at this wedding.
In a Capital One commercial recently, so yeah, I think he is alive. Yeah, but this is her third wedding. I mean, I don't think she's going to play it up like another big-time wedding.
I don't know. Yeah, because the Mahomes wedding.
I mean, the dude,
also,
he just signed for half a bill, pretty much. That's, you know, I don't doubt that they love each other. But, hey, you know, I'd be hanging around Patrick Mahomes a lot more, too, if I knew him personally and he just signed for half a bill.
But I also think there's a shot Adam Sandler shows up at Heather Locklear's wedding. I mean, they were in a movie together. They're supposed to be friends.
Sandler might show up at all these weddings, probably.
That would be the wedding to go to. Ultimately, if you want to go to one of these weddings. I also think, like, Dog the Bounty Hunter is the bottom of my list, easily. Because I like to be at the Conor McGregor wedding. It could have a fight at it. Like, could you imagine, like, you know, Dana White hanging out at this wedding and Conor gets the microphone?
I am very, very well coached. We are ready here. We are ready for war. We are ready for all outcomes, all situations, all scenarios. Supreme, supreme confidence you are looking at here. So we're going to go out and enjoy this contest on October 6th. Because, again, that's all I'm doing it for. Because I love it. Don't have to deal with otherwise. It's just because I love it.
I don't have to do it otherwise. Doesn't have to get... And by the way, didn't he retire? He's done, right?
This is like his third retirement. So yeah, he is retired as far as retirement means anything to Conor McGregor.
There's Dana White talking about Conor McGregor's retirement earlier this
First
summer.
Of all, let me start here. Let me reiterate. We're in a pandemic and the world is a really crazy, confusing place right now. And I think that a lot of people are feeling this. Listen, you don't think that I do? You think that what I'm doing right now is easy at all? I mean, there's three times a day I throw my hands up. I'm like, I'm done. I'm done with this. So I understand what everybody's going through, you know? And, you know, everybody wants a fight right now. You just said it yourself. We can't move around. We can't go to different arenas. There's a lot of things we can't do. And I think a lot of people are frustrated right now. Frustrated and upset. Mad, confused. Mm-hmm. I think that the world is very emotional, a very emotional place right now. Yeah. And nothing surprises me right now. Nothing surprises me.
That's Dana White reacting to the retirement of Conor McGregor. By the way, when you search in our system for Dana White and Conor McGregor, you get Dana White happy with McGregor and Dana White disappointed with McGregor and everything in between.
Listen, you don't like Khabib and you don't like what happened or whatever, then fight Khabib. You can come in here and you can do it legally. This fight's happening Saturday. We could have talked and made the Khabib fight right after. You could do whatever you wanted to Khabib within the limits of the rules of you know, fighting. But you want to grab 30 friends and come down here and do what you did today? It's disgusting. And I don't think anybody is going to be, you know, huge Conor McGregor fans after this.
But then he shows up at the wedding. Love Conor. Made me a lot of money. Dana White, Don King 2.0. All right. Coming up, Devon Pouncey. He is the host of the Wake Up and Win podcast, former intern on this show, college basketball player, man of the world. Leave it here. Our next guest, former intern on this radio show. Not so many years ago. College basketball player, man of the world, host of the Wake Up and Win podcast, Devon Pouncey joining us. Pounce, where are you, man?
I am at Street Roots. I'm at work, and I'm taking a quick break so I can holler at you, man.
Give us an idea, because for people who don't know Street Roots, what is Street Roots, and what is your role there?
So basically, Street Roots is a nonprofit organization. We work really closely with the homeless and impoverished. We're a low-barrier income opportunity for them by way of them actually selling our weekly newspaper. We tend to write more about, like, social issues and political things, but we weave a bit of sports in there sometimes as well, especially when I write a piece or two around here. But, yeah, man, we do a lot of advocacy work around here. I'm actually the vendor program director, so I oversee the vendor program and work pretty directly with the unhoused community and, you know, making sure that I'm learning from them when I go into places and spaces where they can't necessarily advocate for themselves, and then just making sure that the day-to-day operations are going smooth around here.
When people are walking around and they encounter somebody selling a copy of Street Roots, what are you encountering in that moment?
Well, for one, I think you're encountering an interaction with somebody that's unhoused or impoverished that you probably never would in other aspects of your life, especially if you're somebody that's privileged enough to have a roof over your head. And you get to learn a lot from them. A lot of our vendors are well-versed and they're well-educated on some of the things that are actually inside of the newspaper, and then just other things where you can learn more about your neighbors that are out here in the community, whether you like it or not that they're your neighbors. I think, you know, always having an open mind and being willing to learn from people who have different circumstances than you do is important in your own individual growth.
Devon Pouncey with us, Straight Roots, the Wake Up and Win podcast, former intern, former college basketball player, man of the world. Let's talk about your time here with this radio show. What did you learn on this show that you took forward with you?
Just to be myself and lean into what I believe and what I stand on. You know, building a brand, I think, is something that's really important that I learned from you, obviously. You got the Bald Face Truth brand going really well, not just with your content and your takes, but you keep the head shaved nicely and tight, no facial hair. I mean, bald face, you got it rocking over there, man. So, you know, I obviously have my own podcast with Wake Up and Win that is a brand that I'm building on my own. And, you know, I had it while I was there when I was an intern for you and co-hosting the Justin and Devon show, and I'm still keeping it rocking to this day, man. So, yeah, standing on my beliefs, building my brand, and, you know, never giving up on myself and what it is that I want to do and accomplish in my own life and career.
You had me join you on your podcast. It was eye-opening for me. It was a different role for me to be asked questions. I thought you did a hell of a job. What is your aim with that podcast?
Well, I like to focus on, like, the intersection of sports and politics, and I think right now is an important time for us to be willing to do so. Obviously, I'm an analyst as well when it comes to sports. I'm the, you know, TV analyst for Portland State's men's basketball team. I do some play-by-play work at Pacific University as well. But I like this platform to be a bit different where we can have conversations that are a little bit more important, a little bit more nuanced, but still have fun with it. A lot of people tend to get stressed out when they have conversations about politics and social issues and things like that. And I don't think it always needs to be a stressful conversation, even though it's more than necessary to have. So I try to keep things light while touching on issues that plague our nation and plague this world in a lot of ways. Because I know most platforms that touch on some of the same issues that I do, they can be kind of depressing. And I'm not here to depress anybody, but I'm never scared to have the real conversations that are needed to be had.
We had a conversation earlier this week on this show about that. I've always tried to keep politics out of this show because I feel like people are coming here to get a break. But I also don't consider racism to be a political issue. That, to me, is a civil rights issue. It's a social issue. Am I being naive?
No, I mean, I agree with you that it is a civil rights issue and a social issue, but if we want to see public policy be changed that actually has an effect on things like racism and sexism and things like that, then you kind of got to get political to be able to make that happen. So I think it's really something that you can't avoid as hard as you may try to. And whatever lens you try to look at it from, a lot of reasons that, you know, racism and sexism and other oppressive things happen in this nation and this world happens to do with the political system that's been set up for things to operate the way that they do. And so a lot of it is learned, and the system enhances a lot of that learning. So I just think you can't really avoid it, although, you know, some people try to in every way possible.
Talking to Devon Pouncey, former college basketball player, host of the Wake Up and Win podcast. The NBA playoffs have been terrific. What do you make of the playoffs? Clippers looked really good last night. Who do you like in the East and who do you like in the West?
Well, in the West, I've been rocking with the Clippers the day that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George were announced that they would be going to play together with that team. I just think they're too good of a team over there. They're really deep. Doc Rivers has a lot of coaching experience. And in the East, you know, you got the Heat looking good right now, but I honestly see the Toronto and Boston series as kind of like the Eastern Conference Finals right now, because I think whoever takes that series will end up beating whoever takes the Heat and the Bucks series, and they'll come out of the Eastern Conference and play against the Clippers and take them to 6 or 7. Ultimately, I got the Clips winning it all, but I think you're watching the Eastern Conference Finals right now in the semifinal round between Toronto and Boston. That's just my take on it.
What is going on with Milwaukee? Why are they having the trouble they're having with Miami? What is Miami doing?
Well, one thing, I think Miami has a lot of good defenders. I think, you know, they got a guy in Jimmy Butler who's been known as a defensive stud throughout his career. Miami also can shoot it really well, and I don't think the Bucks can shoot it so well. And I think, you know, teams that can shoot in this day and age, and, you know, when you look at where the game is going to, they tend to have more success. I don't think the Bucks can really shoot it much. Giannis playing from up top really isn't necessarily the best thing for him. They need to figure out a way to diversify how he can be a weapon in that offense and not just kind of have him playing from the top against a defense that's set up and can load up on him. And so it's no surprise to me that Miami is giving the Bucks the time that they're giving them right now, because, like I said, they can shoot it, they can defend, and until the Bucks figure out a way to get hot, I think they're going to struggle to actually become champions in this league.
Devon Pouncey is with us. Blazers get knocked out by the Lakers just in over their heads ultimately in that series. But what does this roster need to compete in the West moving forward?
I mean, you know, it's always kind of been that two-way guy, whether it be a two-way guy on the wing, whether it be a two-way guy in the paint. But I just don't think there's enough two-way options. And I'm not talking about a 3-and-D guy. I'm talking about a guy that can be just as dominant on the offensive end as they can be on the defensive end, even if the three ball isn't falling for them. Because maybe, you know, they can get to the line. They got a good mid-range game. They obviously can shoot the three as well. But I think they need a guy that can be just as dominant or just as much of a game changer on both sides of the ball, all wrapped into one human being. And I think, you know, it allows you to do more as far as being flexible with your lineups, and it allows them to have more of a presence on the defensive end, which is what they definitely need. So, like I said, even if it's a dominant shot blocker who also can give you 30 a night, that's cool. Or if it's somebody like a Kawhi or a Paul George who plays well on the perimeter but can score 30 a night for you, that's cool too. But some kind of two-way guy that can be just as dominant on both sides of the ball is what I think is necessary for the Blazers.
You got to give up a player to get a player like that unless you draft them. Who on this roster do you give up C.J. McCollum? Are you ready to give up on that backcourt?
I think we've had enough of a sample size of Dame and CJ together to know kind of what that ceiling is. So I don't think CJ's off the table necessarily, but if you can figure out a way to package some other guys and keep CJ, obviously you'd love to do that. But, you know, I think we've seen the ceiling of this team going to the Western Conference Finals last year. They ended up getting swept there. I know they played against a really good Warriors team, but still, I think that's their ceiling with what they have right now. So I don't think CJ's off the table to be traded, but If you can some way mastermind a way to be able to keep CJ and then get a guy like I just explained, that's what it's going to take for the Blazers to ultimately become a champion.
Devon Pouncey with us. The NBA has, if we get this Boston Clippers NBA Finals, you still riding with the Clippers?
I'm still riding with the Clippers, but I think Boston can take them to 6 or 7, which means they have a chance. So I don't think it's, oh, the Clippers sweep them or the Clippers get them in 5 in a gentleman's sweep. I think Boston has potential to be champions. I think they're well coached, and I think they have a few of those guys that I think the Blazers need. I mean, you look at somebody like a Jason Tatum or a Jaylen Brown. I think those are guys that I'm talking about that can be a difference maker on both sides of the ball, whether it be offensively scoring it or defensively, you know, guarding the best player on the opposing team. So I think they match up fairly decently, having those two against somebody like a Kawhi and Paul George. I think that, you know, is a really good matchup. I still think the older tandem of George and Kawhi Leonard will be able to get Tatum and Jaylen Brown, but I think that's a matchup that would be really fun to watch. And I think Boston has more experience than we give them credit for, because those young guys have been in the playoffs every year in their young 3 to 4 year careers.
Devon, the Blazers narrative every year, every summer is can't get a free agent. You have to rely on the draft or a trade. Why won't free agents come to Portland?
You know, I think for a lot of the time it's been the weather. Obviously, we get cold out here. Things get rainy out here. But I do think that the profile of this city is elevating, and I do think people are a bit more interested in Portland now than they've been in the past. I mean, for a lot of different reasons. Obviously, Damian Lillard himself being one of them. And I just think that this city stands for something that a lot of people are starting to recognize is necessary for any city to stand for. So, and often you hear a lot of good about this city when you actually talk to somebody that does live there. I just think it's more so about opening their minds to those kinds of things and kind of being willing to overcome some of the challenges that the weather brings. And, you know, I think we're getting to a point where free agents will at least put their eye on Portland and, you know, look at it as a city that they could potentially live in and play the remainder of their careers in. So I think it's an upward trend as far as the city is concerned, but still got a little ways to go.
All right, let's get back to Street Roots before I cut you loose. And again, if you want to find Devon Pouncey, you can find him on Twitter. You also can find the Wake Up and Win podcast. Where do they find the podcast, Devon?
Oh, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud. And we had you as a guest on there this week, which is pretty rare. And I think it was cool because, you know, you don't really do much long-form content, being that you're a radio guy. And so usually even when you do get called for appearances, they're probably more so quick hits and quick segments. But I got to chat with you for nearly an hour about sports and politics and John Canzano and other things. So, yeah, check us out on any digital streaming platform that you listen to podcasts on.
For people who want to support Street Roots, how do they get involved?
Well, you can go to the website, streetroots.org. Obviously, you can donate. We have a volunteer program. We're definitely looking for volunteers right now because we are still open and operating. But, you know, some of the volunteers that we had in the past may have been older or retired and, you know, don't necessarily want to take the risk and coming back and volunteering during the pandemic. I will say that, you know, we've been working with the county consistently to make sure that we've created health guidelines and safety measures for us to keep being open and operating. But streetroots.org can take you anywhere that you want to go to be able to, like I said, donate or, you know, volunteer or read our journalism. We've got great journalism, and a lot of people are looking to us for our journalism with everything that's going on in the city of Portland and really across the nation right now. But, you know, Portland is definitely being targeted as that protest city from people on all sides of America. So if you want to kind of stay informed on what's going on in this city as things continue to progress, we're a good way to go.
Devon Pouncey, find his podcast, Wake Up and Win. Devon, I appreciate you, man, and appreciate the time you spent on this radio show. And you and I coached a fourth grade boys CYO basketball team.
Yes,
once upon
did.
A time. You were the head coach. I was your trusted assistant, I believe. And
yeah,
what was that? We weren't very good, were we?
No, we definitely weren't a looker of a team. We were able to get good effort out of those kids, though. But, you know, the talent wasn't quite there. The coaching might not have been there enough either. But, you know, I think talking sports is our thing. But coaching sports, I think we got a little ways to go on that.
I just remember the opposing coaches looking at us because, you know, you're a college basketball player. You walk into the gym and everybody's going, this guy can dunk. I walk in and they're like, "Oh, they got the sports guy on the coaching staff as well." And then we went out and we stunk it up.
Yeah, we did. Like I said, I mean, we didn't get to pick our team, so you know, we had to. You know,
we can't blame the kids.
The cards that we were dealt, and we didn't get dealt a good hand. I'll just say that. But I don't want to, you know, talk about the kids too badly here.
But you know what? We were a little like the Blazers. We had two good guards that were undersized.
Yeah.
And yes, we had a big man who was okay, he was decent. And then we just didn't have perimeter defense and we didn't have depth.
No. No, we did not. We did not. You know, our big man, he was decent, but you know, when guys got a bit physical with him, you know, things got hard for him a little bit on the court, so that certainly didn't help. But I think that's a fair example of a team. But you know, the Blazers are getting paid millions of dollars and still making it to the playoffs. I don't know if we made it to the playoffs in our league unless everybody makes it to the playoffs.
We did.
However,
we did.
It worked is that we did. Everybody makes it, right?
Yep. We got in the playoffs. So, I don't know what you're talking about.
So we made it first round exit like the Blazers. So yeah, maybe you're right, man.
Vaughn Pouncey, appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Pounce. I'm not blaming the talent. I'm going to take the high road. I'm going to say it took us about a game or two to figure out how to play and how to coach in that league. And I remember the very first game, coming back to that first practice after the first game, we scrapped the entire offense. We said, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take advantage of these two guards and we're going to stop trying to run a regular offense. It was fun though. And I remember the joys, and for people out there who coach youth sports, you may relate to this. The victories in the season for us, it was not about trying to win a championship. It wasn't. From the start, it wasn't. And if we had won our first game, it wouldn't have been that way. What it was about were small victories. We had a kid on the team who had never scored a basket in a game. I made it a mission. We're going to get that kid a basket. We got him a basket late in the season. So we ran plays for him. And it was about trying to get every growth out of everybody. We had one kid on the team who was anxious. He was anxious about being at practice. His parents would drop him off at practice, and he would immediately start to have kind of a mild panic attack with his parents leaving the gym. And I spent a lot of time reassuring him that everything is going to be okay. Look, nothing bad happened. Everything is going to be okay. And so it was those kinds of victories by the end of the year and the kid wanting to come back and play another year, that kid in particular. We had a great time. And Pounce and I often sat on the bench, kind of looked at each other and said, we're just not very good in the end. Maybe Terry Stotts did that late in the Lakers-Blazers series. I don't know. Leave it here. You got the BFT statewide. Cam Newton says that the real work with the Patriots begins now. Said it was hard to find words. Named the team's starting quarterback, as well as a team captain on Thursday. By the way, the Patriots have eight team captains. Eight team captains. Quick rise to the top there. I kind of feel like you have to be the team captain if you're the quarterback. And I'm not saying like, in no way, shape, or form could the quarterback ever not be a team captain. But I kind of feel like if you're going to make Cam Newton your starting quarterback, you have to appoint him the leadership position. And I have seen cases in college football where the quarterback's not the team captain. But I think most coaches would defer to that position and go, okay, that's one of our team captains, no matter who it is. Cam Newton says from the moment that he spoke to any personnel with the Patriots, he wanted them to understand he was not taking this opportunity for granted. I don't know how he could. That strikes me as curious, given that essentially his time in Carolina ended with it looked like nobody wanted him. 31 years old, everybody wondering how much he's got left, his injuries. Is he ready for a 16-game season and a preseason and all of that? I mean, nobody knows. But I kind of feel like that surprised me a little bit that he said, I just want everyone to know I'm not taking this for granted. I was like, I didn't believe he was. Chuda, is that like, am I missing something there?
No, I mean, I feel like a lot of teams could have signed Cam outside of New England, Chicago in particular, but they ended up going with Foles for much more money. That didn't really make sense to me. And we have still yet to find out if it's going to be Foles or Trubisky in Matt Nagy's offense this year. I don't know. Honestly, Cam, when he loses a game, let's see where the attitude is. Because he's not been a quarterback that's done very well leading a team that struggles, you know, whether it's his own injuries or otherwise. Let's see when they encounter some adversity, because there will be adversity for the Patriots this year. You know, week one versus Miami, but week two at Seattle on Sunday Night Football. Obviously, you know, if they lose that game, you know, if they lose to the Chiefs week four and they're 2-2 or maybe 1-3 out of the gate, well, show me Cam Newton's countenance then, because I bet you it changes.
And the other thing, too, is it's not like any other position on this team, right? He's replacing Tom Brady, a first ballot, no-brainer, unanimous Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame candidate. We've seen the Patriots over the years play with receivers that were not first-tier receivers by league standards, or a tight end, or on defense, patchwork, or, you know, we've seen them kind of get by and MacGyver it. And while they've had a week or two here or there where they've had to get by with a quarterback who's filling in, I don't foresee this being anybody else's sort of like they're going to point fingers at Cam Newton if this offense isn't right.
And they a lot of guys opted out on defense too. Pat Chung in particular, Dante Hightower as well. This is going to be an interesting. They just cut Mo Sanu, who's going to be a top two receiver for them. So I'm going to be fascinated how they orchestrate this offense, because it's going to look a lot different than what we've seen it before.
And Chung, by the way, was one of six players who opted out of the 2020 season. He had a choice between playing the season or not playing the season, and the difference in his salary was about $200,000.
Yeah.
And he just said, I'm 32 years old. I've got a two-year guaranteed contract. I was expected to start, but you know what? There's a pandemic. I've considered retirement. Why not get paid to sit back and just watch? Leave it here. The 2 o'clock hour is still ahead.
BFFT. Live from the home studios, presented by High Caliber Millwrights. Here's John Canzano with the bald faced truth.
Well, we started the week with anthems. How will we finish the week? That's what I always think about in the 2 o'clock hour. One of the things I want to talk about this hour is something you've observed that you weren't supposed to see. What do I mean by that? Well, Alabama Adriana was in the gym. She reached out to me after her gym experience and said, you know what? I have a topic. What happened in the gym?
Basically, I was on this machine, and I was just like, I was in between sets, and this guy in front of me was like, you know how there's like the squirt bottles and the paper towel stations where you're supposed to like clean off the machine that you're using?
Yes.
And so he goes to grab the squirt bottle, he like puts it on the paper towel, and then goes to put it back into the holder on the wall. And the whole thing falls off and hits the ground, and he has to like roll, or he didn't roll around, but he like had to run around on the ground and like grab it because it's all going everywhere. And I just felt like, I feel like I've had moments like that where people definitely saw it happen. And they're laughing, but I feel really dumb. And so I felt bad for him in this situation, but also I was kind of laughing too.
I was on the treadmill one time, and I had just walked into the gym. I got on the treadmill and started jogging. And I didn't want to stop, but I had a sweatshirt on. And I wasn't running that fast. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to take, kind of keep jogging. I'm going to take my arms out of this sweatshirt. And I, you know, it's like when maybe you're driving and you're at a stoplight and you're trying to get a sweatshirt off and you look like you're in a straitjacket because you're in your car trying with a seatbelt on, trying to get the sweatshirt off. And I was on the treadmill and I got my right arm out and I got my left arm out. And then I thought, well, this is really going to be easy. All I have to do is pull the sweatshirt over my head. But something happened when I went to take the sweatshirt over my head because I essentially ended up blindfolding myself. And I made I had a little misstep. And with my right foot, I stepped just on the edge of the conveyor belt on this treadmill. And of course, all of a sudden, I'm totally disoriented. The sweatshirt's over my head. And I spin myself around because only one leg now is on this treadmill. I stop running. I've totally lost context or where I am. And I ended up like flying off the back of the treadmill, falling on the ground, and I ripped the sweatshirt off of my head. I'm okay. I'm not like hurt. And I'm looking around like, did anyone see that? And of course people saw it. Totally embarrassing. What did you do when the guy pulled the thing out of the wall?
I mean, I didn't say anything, but I was just thinking about it in my head. And then instant karma. My weight, after I was done, I was going to like put my weight up and I kept trying to like kick it with my foot and like get it to do this certain thing. And it kept falling over and then rolling away, then falling over. So I instantly felt like it was just karma coming right back at me.
I love when you observe something like that and people don't think you saw and you go, okay, I got you. I saw it. Judah Newby, you ever have something like that happen? Something that you weren't supposed to see that you observe?
I feel like being downtown a lot, you can pretty much get an example of that on the daily. 5-second rule, you know, with food. But when you're out in public, say, I don't know, for the sake of example, you're slamming one of those hot dogs at Costco and a little bit spills out onto the picnic table. And, you know, I try to set a good example for society, but I may or may not have used the 5-second rule to pick up part of the hot dog from off the table and ate it again. It's certainly not very sanitary. It's kind of disgusting. And I was embarrassed when I looked next to me and there was an 8-year-old staring right at me with his mouth open.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And I'm like,
kids.
Dude, kid, I'm telling you, man, you grow
nothing.
Up. Exactly. You got to eat what's in front of you. It's kind of nasty, but, you know, it's a good hot dog.
My 4-year-old dropped a popsicle in the kitchen the other day and she literally picked it up and started to put it in her mouth again. I said, hold on, give me that. And I looked at it and there was like a hair attached to it, you know, and I was like, no, we're not going to eat this. Just go get a new popsicle. You got to start over. All right, our 2 at 2, we do it every day in the 2 o'clock hour.
The 2 at 2.
LeBron and the Lakers take on the Rockets, Western Conference semifinals, game one. That's tonight, 6 o'clock Pacific time, ESPN. The NBA playoffs have been nothing short of amazing. And I mean that, so many close games. So many compelling games. The Lakers really haven't been yet a compelling part of the postseason. I mean that with all sincerity. Like, they got Anthony Davis. They've got LeBron James. I mean, they are interesting by themselves, but the Lakers got beat in game one of their first round series with the Blazers. Then they came back and just made a mockery of the Blazers in the rest of the season, or the rest of that series. But ultimately, it hasn't been a lot of excitement for the Lakers.
LeBron with a long three, and that one's down. LeBron James makes it a 10-0 start.
In fact, LeBron James's probably biggest moments of the playoffs so far weren't even really on the court. Stephen A. Smith on ESPN talking about how LeBron walked out of that players' meeting in the bubble. Remember that?
I heard, first of all, he was speaking out of pocket and was talking to the players in a fashion that really turned some of the young, some of these young cats off. This is a new day. It's a new generation. And as we have said in previous shows, when cats were out in the street protesting and things of that nature, just talking about the younger generation, they're not having it anymore. Well, guess what? The younger generation of players were not having what they were hearing from LeBron James because the fashion in which he spoke to them. So when he stormed out of there, I was told it was in part because of that. And he sort of came off like, I got mine, I don't need this, and walked out.
Truth is, LeBron on a given night is still the best player in the game. If the young players want to make a statement, they'll have to be the young Rockets players in game one. And I find it interesting now that James Harden becomes an underdog. Is he more likable? Will people root for the Rockets in this series is what I'm getting at. Game one tonight, 6 o'clock, ESPN. Second thing in my 2 at 2, Pac-12 conference. I started today's show with it. Larry Scott, Pac-12 commissioner, out doing a lot of talking. Very easy to nitpick, parse his words, whatever you want to do with Larry Scott. He is an easy target. I found his comments today on the Dan Patrick Show to be a little wishy-washy. He's still a politician, still a conference commissioner. But if you're a Pac-12 fan who wants to see football played as soon as possible, this rapid testing development is good news.
As it is now, you're not going to play fall football.
No, as it is now, we had made a decision several weeks ago.
And this doesn't change that.
It could. It doesn't yet. Again, we don't have government approvals yet.
Yeah.
But if we get government approvals and we can implement this testing, certainly we could. You know, basketball, it looks like the NCAA is going to change the start date of the basketball season from November 10th to probably November 25th or later. So that's probably the first decision we got to take. Can we revisit the decision to not play basketball before January 1st and maybe start the season at the same date or close to when the rest of the country is?
We all want to see them play. I think what the conference commissioner is saying is, look, we're on the path toward playing. Nothing definitive now. I got them at the 40-yard line, their own 40, 60 yards from pay dirt. But this is also a conference that they have to punt from midfield. Keep an eye on it. Big development, though, on that conversation was him talking about the relationship with the Big Ten. We've known for some time that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten were in cahoots with each other. Larry Scott talking about how they want to move towards a spring Rose Bowl.
One of our considerations is going to be, trying to move in tandem with the Big Ten if we can. It's a little unclear where they are and what they're going to do, despite me talking to their commissioner every day. But, if the two of our conferences can move together, we've got pretty exciting vision of playing, Big Ten, Pac-12 seasons, finishing with a Pac-12 championship, Big Ten championship, and then playing a Rose Bowl and other bowl games at the end of the season, even if it's an early spring game.
There it is, Pac-12, Big Ten, in it together. That's our 2 at 2. Two biggest things going on in the world of sports. Will you root for James Harden? Will you root for the Rockets? Alabama Adriana, will you find it in your heart to root for the Rockets? I think James Harden helped me in the post game on TNT the other night when, he gave us this gem.
What were you feeling at that moment?
Offensively, I put it like excuse my language, but I couldn't make a shot, turn the ball over, just doing everything that was not supposed to happen, but I just kept sticking with it. You know, my teammates give me confidence throughout the course of games, and defensively, I had to make a play, and I tried to close out to him. Dort has been knocking out some shots tonight, so I wanted to get out to him.
He blocked a Lou Dort three-pointer. Houston beat Oklahoma City in that big game 7. I think the Lakers are just going to obliterate the Rockets in game 1 of this series, much the same that the Clippers did to the Nuggets. I just think it's a lot of emotion coming off of Game 7. Alabama Adriana, will you root for James Harden? Do you like James Harden?
I think he's had some interesting like pop culture experiences that I've known about. But I like what he said, like owning up to his, his not playing well and then kind of coming back. But I guess I'll root for him. I don't really even know who to root for anymore.
Yeah. I think the Clippers are hard because they're a favorite. Who likes to root for a favorite unless you're an LA person? Then, I mean, I guess the Nuggets would be a fun team to root for, but I think they're overmatched. I think there's just a level of play. And I think the Lakers and Clippers in the West are just so far above everybody else that I think that, you know, it's hard to say that, you know, the Nuggets or the Rockets can stay in this series. Judah, will you root for James Harden?
Yeah, I'm similar with Adriana. I don't really want to root for anybody in the Western Conference. I root for Jamal Murray, and I like Jokic. That's pretty much it. But the Clippers, I don't root for Pat Bev. I don't root for Paul George. I kind of root for Kawhi. The Rockets are very, very dislikable outside of Mike D'Antoni, but I kind of want to see that just crash and burn, and I want to see D'Antoni go and maybe take the Indiana job that McMillan vacated. And, of course, I can't root for the Lakers. I mean, I'm interested in them, but I don't root for them. So my rooting interest is probably going to the Eastern Conference once again, intrigued by what Pounce said with the Toronto-Boston series. And Miami. Miami's fun. I like them.
I have this Lakers-Rockets series has the potential to be super annoying because I think it's just going to be annoying to see the Lakers, all that talk about the Lakers, and then all, you know, the Harden stuff. I just think it's...
I'm already annoyed by that series and it has to start.
I'm just cringing a little bit. And I keep going back, like, I think it was last summer that, you know, Carmelo Anthony, there was all this talk about Carmelo Anthony, who I think we all view now as a guy who is, he got along in that Blazers locker room. Coaching staff said he was a joy to deal with. Management said he was a joy to deal with. But James Harden didn't want him in Houston. And now it kind of reaffirms my thoughts that, you know, if Carmelo Anthony, would he be on the Rockets if James Harden was a better guy? Like, you know what I mean? He was a better teammate. So I kind of look at that, and I think that's one more thing that you got to hold against Harden. I always want to take sides and stuff like that, and I'm clearly now, I had reasonable doubt before. I thought maybe Carmelo Anthony, his ego or whatever, I think that was 100% on James Harden not wanting another guy around who was a star player and could have been a threat to take the ball out of James Harden's hands.
How do you rectify Russell Westbrook being on that team or Chris Paul last year? I mean, it's the same thing, just you know, slightly different.
I just keep coming back to, remember last year in the playoffs, those video exchanges between Paul and Harden that were captured that basically pretty much they couldn't coexist. Like, James Harden, for whatever reason, is a tough roommate to have. I don't know if you've ever had a bad roommate who you got along with in other ways, but you just couldn't live with this person.
Oh, you talked about this yesterday, right?
Yeah, it's just, for whatever reason, and I have sound here. Carmelo Anthony was asked last summer if he would still be on the Rockets if James Harden wanted him. Here's what he said.
Is that how you feel, that if James Harden wanted you on the team, you would be there?
I never spoke to James about this. I can't, I would never jump the gun. I would never make that assumption. I had a one-on-one heart-to-heart with CP in my room 1 o'clock in the morning. Looked him in his eye. He looked me in my eyes and told me, yo, bro, like I would never do something like that to you. I take that, right? That with me and him, it goes deeper than basketball. So for him to sit there and really feel the pain that I was going through at that moment, like being very vulnerable at that moment, I honestly could say that I don't think he knew anything about it.
I think Melo's letting him off the hook there. I think he's essentially saying James Harden didn't want me there, and all right, you know, feelings are hurt, but move on. Anna stepped into the studio. She'll join us coming up. If you want to lower your interest rates on your home loan, go to goldenoaklending.com. Get the free mortgage checkup. You can shorten the term of your loan, lower your monthly payment, take advantage of record low interest rates. You've heard me talk about this all summer. Do not let this get away from you. Go to goldenoaklending.com and get that free mortgage checkup today. It is not too late. They can lower your monthly payment. You can take some cash out, and you get relief with Golden Oak Lending, because when you do a loan with Golden Oak Lending, you can miss two mortgage payments, skip those mortgage payments while that loan is being recorded. So goldenoaklending.com, get the free mortgage checkup. Leave it here. Every day about this time, studio door opens. Anna comes through the door. Today, she's got... You've been in the sun today. I can tell.
Uh-huh.
How did that go?
Great.
Where were you?
Down by the river.
Down by the river. Were you in a van?
No, no van. Just hanging out. Beach, you know, blanket kind of thing.
We have a beach on the river?
Yeah.
How is that? Tell me about it.
It's rocky. It's sandy. It's, you know, there's different parts to it. And it was kind of a secret beach. I'd never been there before. A friend of ours told us about it. So we went to go check it out today, and it was awesome. Kids loved it.
Every time I hear about the river, I think about years ago we had this guy in studio. He was a former NFL player, and I can't remember his name. But he went on to a career in the opera.
Okay.
He became an opera singer. He was like a marginal NFL player. Like
yeah.
He got cut, made a practice yeah. squad or something. But then he had studied singing. Do you study singing, or what is that major? Do you get a major in
music,
singing?
Music, right? It's more general than just singing.
I don't know.
It's like music.
But he had this amazing baritone voice.
I remember that. You had him sing on the show.
We had him sing Old Man River. Oh, yeah, I think... let me see if I can bring it up. Yeah, I have the cut. Old Man River. He sang it.
Old Man River, that Old Man River, he must know some, but don't say nothing, he just keeps rolling, he keeps on rolling along.
Every time I hear that, I have to come back on with a little deeper voice because I don't want to sound like I have helium in my lungs.
We all sound like we have helium compared to that. Man.
I feel like a cartoon character.
That's incredible. Were you listening to how he allowed, like, you could tell as he was singing, he was letting so much sound fill his mouth.
Maybe you know? I like, should do that oh, more.
Yeah. We should be speaking.
No. Yeah, but, like, that's a guy with a gift, right? He's blessed.
Sure.
And he
training
goes,
helps. I mean, you can be born a certain way and then train to go to the next level.
I remember because they were in Portland and the opera was coming through.
Oh, okay.
And the PR person reached out to me and said, would you like this guy on the show?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And then they gave me the story.
But that's a good guess. I mean, if he had been a former, you know, NFL player.
Yeah.
And turned opera singer, that's a great story.
Yeah, I'm trying to find his name so I can bring it back up. But it was like, but when I searched football player turned opera.
Yeah, are there multiple?
There's multiple players here.
Maybe there's a connection.
What's the deal here? I think the guy's name was Keith Miller. I want to say.
Okay.
Because he was traveling around. This Keith Miller's in the Metropolitan Opera right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in Phantom of the Opera. But really, I also think, yeah, this was him. Yeah, he was with the Raiders and the Broncos. And he had to switch from being a football player to being an opera star. What would you rather be? Would you rather be a star athlete or a star opera singer?
Like... athlete versus football player?
Football player. If you had to choose between a career in the NFL.
Yeah, I would choose the opera. You get less concussions in opera.
You also have a longer career.
That too.
Why couldn't you do both? Bo Jackson played baseball, played football. Why couldn't this guy play both?
You could.
Be smashing people on Sundays and then singing to them on Monday.
That's what you tell, you know... kids like who are six. Oh, you can be anything. You can be an archaeologist and a, you know, scientist and a ballerina all at the same time.
Is that what you wanted? Because you were like a double major. That's ridiculous.
I didn't originate as a double major. I originated just as a broadcast journalism major, and I wasn't sure that I was going to cut it as a reporter, so I needed a backup plan.
So your backup plan was?
International business.
Oh, I see.
So I could go, you know, make use of the fact that I spoke Mandarin Chinese and,
and help businesses figure out better strategies for how to operate.
I think one of the coolest things about you understanding how to speak and write in Chinese is when you see tattoos on people that are Chinese.
Because they're often wrong. Like, they're just, they're either made up symbols that are supposed to be Chinese, or they're, the translation is just so off. You're like, what do you think your tattoo says? Yeah, no, it doesn't really say that, but okay.
Yeah, give me an idea here, because Marcus Camby was one of these ones that came up, and he has this Chinese tattoo on his arm or his shoulder. Look, here's the, I got a photo of it right there. Do you see what it says there? It didn't say what he thought it was supposed to say.
Yeah.
Can you read that, or is that hard to do off of at this distance? Let me open the story up, because I can tell you exactly what it was supposed to be. But people were saying,
well, it's supposed to mean like to strive.
Yeah.
And the second one was supposed to mean tribe or family.
Okay.
But the problem, and individually they sort of mean that, but when you combine the characters, it just doesn't make sense, if that makes any sense.
Bad idea. So it's not,
but you
really
know what? It's his body, whatever. It's what he wanted
to say. Yeah, but like, I think if he would have consulted with somebody, don't you think he would have picked something different?
But Chinese is weird that way.
Explain.
It's just a weird language, because you can have two symbols. It would be like making a compound word in English with two words that don't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Like here are some tattoos that people have on their back. I'm going to show you some examples here. Can you give us some translations of what you're seeing there? There's a woman who's got a tattoo on her back. And it looks really cool. But what does that actually say?
There's ones that actually mean like mean crime poet, which I can't imagine. There's another one which looks cool, but it actually means drowning in weed.
What does it look like? See, the thing is that people, like, even when you go to China, you go into like the silk market.
Yeah.
There'll be a dude who's sitting there who will write your name in Chinese.
Yeah.
Or whatever you want in Chinese.
Yeah.
And people like that because it looks cool.
Yeah.
So give us an example, like something that looks cool, and then, you know, you can read.
Well, like this tattoo actually looks cool, because it's supposed to look kind of like badass. Like, I don't eat meat, but I bite. But literally the translation is 我不吃肉,但是我咬. And so the literal translation is, I don't eat meat, but I bite.
I bite.
Look at that. It just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. But you,
maybe it's a really like hard-ass vegan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. But I think somebody, like, go ahead, Judah.
There's a Kenny Mayne, who was a longtime ESPN personality, had a show that in one of the episodes on his show was him getting a Chinese wisdom inked on his arm, and he wanted to have love is my sword.
Oh, and he got?
He checked in with Michael Kim, his broadcast partner. He said, Kenny, that says my love sword is small.
Whoops!
I never forget that one. My love sword is small. You didn't fact check that, Kenny?
Right. Like, it's permanent ink. Like, you'd want to be so sure of what you were getting on your body, considering it was going to be with you for a really long time.
All right. Yeah. But you get the impression there that what that language looks like when you're learning to write in Chinese, because you had to do that, right?
Uh-huh.
You were learning to write the language.
Yeah.
You know, it looks cool. Like, you could write chicken noodle soup, and it would look awesome on your bicep.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
So, do people in China make fun of the Americans who get drowning in weed, or I don't eat meat, but bite me on their arms?
I think Americans make fun of Americans that accidentally have that happen. But I think we do the same thing with a lot of cultures. Like, when you think about it, you know, we sort of romanticize the French language, the Italian language, and the Chinese actually do it back. Like, think about, you know, when we visited China, all of the random T-shirts that we would see people wearing that just had nonsensical, like, yes, English phrases on them, because to them, having an English phrase looks cool. So they would just have kind of like off-the-wall English phrases in funny, cool colors and characters.
Yeah.
And to them, that was cool, you know?
Yeah. There was one guy who's got a T-shirt that says, his T-shirt says, "Nice assets feel."
Right.
He doesn't know what it says.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's rabbit dons eat candy. There's another one. There's another guy whose shirt says, "Crap your hands."
Oh, dear.
Look.
But, see, it's in like, calligraphy, right?
Yeah, but he likes that.
You know, the coolness factor is...
There you go. So, be careful what you're walking around with your shirt. I know we saw that.
Yeah.
We saw that with people, because people just wanted to have a shirt on. And some people had, like, a bad word on their shirt. I can't even repeat what this guy's shirt says. It's a horrible word.
Oh.
He's walking around in the grocery store with it. He said, you know, it looks like somebody's dead.
Yeah.
Doesn't know. Mm. All right. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. So I asked Oregon Governor Kate Brown's office today about the process to return to practice for Oregon and Oregon State football. I got an answer on that front. The governor's office tells me that the universities are working through the process right now with the Oregon Health Authority about how they can safely hold practices while complying with updated health and safety guidelines. Those conversations are ongoing with the goal of keeping players, coaches, and communities safe. That's what we're getting. So it'll be the Oregon Health Authority and the governor's office that will be part of that. So that's an interesting development for those of you out there that are interested in finding out the return to practice sort of protocols in our state. Anna, what'd you make of yesterday, today? Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner, coming out and saying that, I'll let you hear for yourself. Does the testing advances that the Pac-12 has made, does it mean that they're going to play fall football?
If the test goes well, is the Pac-12 in business playing football this fall?
I believe we will be. Whether it's in the fall or January 1st remains to be seen. This isn't unfortunately our only challenge. We've got six schools currently, Dan, the four California schools, UCLA, USC, Stanford, and Cal, and two of our Oregon schools, Oregon and Oregon State, that don't currently have government approvals to have contact practice. I know the approvals have been given for pro sports, but not for college sports. So we'll need some help from the county's public health officials to bless this and say it's okay. Now, I think what we announced yesterday is going to be an important piece of that. I think the public health officials are keenly interested in what our plans and protocols are. So I'm hopeful that we will get what we need.
There it is. You've got a health and safety protocol that obviously with Lane County and Benton County, that's not Multnomah County. But you do have students that presumably would be returning to campus in both those places. Immediate thoughts, Anna, as you hear that and you hear sort of the governor's bureaucratic response. You got bureaucracy meeting bureaucracy here, by the way.
I understand how important college football is for many reasons. Like, culturally, it's just embedded. Budget-wise, it's vital for the universities. And it's awesome that they're going to plow ahead with rapid testing. I say that as I go into the weekend trying to get our home schoolroom ready to teach our kids, thinking, well, if we can do it for sports, can we maybe figure out how to do it for school, like elementary, middle, and high school kids? Because I think we can all agree education's important, and I guess it makes me hopeful that we could advance this toward, you know, rapid testing for teachers and schools.
All right, so let me ask you this, because that point has come up. I saw people complaining. Why is this being made available to college football players in particular and not, you know, healthcare workers, teachers? Where, if you have this capability to test and you only have one machine in every community, where should that machine be?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, healthcare workers are tested, obviously. That's, you know, they have to be because they're working in a vulnerable population.
All right, but you only have one. You're getting this new machine. Where are we putting it? Schools? Their supermarket? The mall? Where are we going with this machine?
I don't know. I'm not the governor. I'm not in charge of these kind of things. I don't know.
Governor Anna.
Oh, gosh. I would think, like, essential workers, like, who have to work, you know, the people who are still out. And,
are you saying teachers are not essential workers?
So then teachers. But see, it's just a conundrum because then it's just a numbers game. You know, how rapidly will you test? Who's going to pay for the testing? See, in large part, like, the cynical side of me says, I get it. They're going to do it for college football because guess what? It brings in a lot of money.
Right.
Right.
And that's not a bad reason if you are a government or a state. Yeah. That's not a bad reason. Hey, this is going to provide tax base. This is going to affect a large number of people. I do think it too, like we look at athletes as like they're healthier, right? They're this young. You have people in their 20s that are young and in relatively good shape or great shape. And you're going to say, we're going to bring these testing equipment to you. If this stuff is successful, I do think you could roll it out on a college campus and then roll it out in individual school districts. Every day when kids come in, they're tested, and 15 minutes later, we know whether or not somebody needs to go home. You're right. Going home sick.
But I just don't know what the cost is. If right. It's the cost is so prohibitive that, you know, state, local governments just can't afford to test people every day in mass, you know, and whether that's even practical. But, yeah, in my ideal world, sure, I would love that. And I think a lot of people would. Because, let's face it, homeschooling? Holy moly.
Why are you so nervous about that? We've just pretty much
been
doing that all summer.
Because I suck as a teacher. I don't have patience. Every day I homeschool our kids, I'm like, God bless our teachers who had to deal with, like, 20 of these children at the same time. I don't know how they do it.
Everyone wants to blame the wet market and China. And it may very well be that that's the origin of this virus, but maybe teachers who felt unappreciated were
all
like,
right, okay.
All right,
jump
you guys,
the shark.
You guys.
That's just weird.
No, look, if I don't think the teachers are winners here, though, because I think the teachers right now have it harder than ever because they've had to adjust to digital learning themselves. They want to be in a classroom where they can get eyes on kids.
Absolutely. Like, you know, taking the call from your brother, who is an adaptive PE specialist. So, like, he teaches PE to kids who are differently abled. How is he going to do that via Zoom? He's trying to set up, like, the backdrop in his garage and figure out how he can demonstrate exercises to kids, you know, and their parents, presumably, who will help them through the exercises. Like, I don't blame teachers are probably freaking out. The ones that aren't already and still trying to get ready and trying to figure out how to do distance learning and how to connect with their kids, you know?
I've come away from this time with more respect for teachers, more respect for healthcare workers, more respect for law enforcement, the good law enforcement people that are out there trying to do their jobs and doing them well, more challenging than ever. I won't for a second complain and whine and bitch about trying to have to do a radio show from a home studio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, you could, but you won't.
Only that day when the mouse chewed the cable in half.
Yeah, that was a hard day for
you. It's right over there by you, by the way.
I thought you were going to stroke out.
You weren't actually here when that was going down. The kids told me later, Dad, you were running back and forth really crazy. And I was like, yeah, I was trying to get to... It's a weird thing. Like, I'm not an engineer.
Yeah.
But I can... I know how engineers think, and I've watched them work. It's... That's why they always tell you, like, you know, you'll call the customer service line for some computer that isn't working, and they'll say, have you tried rebooting it? And you know, just go, yes, I've tried rebooting it. Because we all have, like, a little engineer in us. But the really good engineers, like Thor,
mm-hmm.
Mike Alston,
yes.
You know, talented wizards. It is a methodical, but, like, they'll just go right down the checklist.
Yeah, I know.
It's not some Yahoo reading, like, from a piece of paper. Just their brains are geared in a way that goes, all right, let's think about the most likely scenario that could happen here, and let's check that.
Right.
Not that, we move to the next. Not that, we move to the next. I think Thor would have got it on about the third step. He would have been like, you might have had a mouse who chewed the cable in half. And for me, it took me about 8 steps, and then removing the cable from the wall and going, what? And then I went, oh, mouse.
That thing was so gross. You set it out by the garbage the other day, and the girls were fascinated by it.
Yeah. Like, I was fascinated, too, because the apparently the mice like the taste of the cable. It's soy-based cable that is insulated. So the mice like it. So if you have that cable in the wall, we had the exterminator who called in, who just horrified us. And by the way, I set that trap back up. We have not caught another one.
Yeah.
So either they wised up or this guy was rogue. Like he was a one-off, you know.
Who knew that cables were now coated in soy? Like a partially organic substance.
Apparently the mice like them. All right, leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. All right, I got to ask you guys a question, Alabama Adriana included. I want you guys to tell me what you think of this song. Make of that song? Opinions. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
It's got a good beat.
Judah?
As soon as the song started, got a big L from me.
You don't like it?
No. I'm out.
It is the number one song played by people 17 to 21 years old. Stay younger together. I bring that up because there's a problem going on nationally. I don't know if you guys realize this, but Temple University in Philadelphia has called it quits. They sent students home. Colorado College did it earlier this week. University of Alabama has 1,200 COVID positive tests. University of South Carolina, its positive test rate is above 27%.
Whoa.
University of Illinois is begging the fan the students to stop partying. They have created patrols that are going out and breaking up parties. Kids are not listening. Is anybody surprised by this?
Nope.
Stop partying.
That's really hard to get them to do that. I mean, they're literally like wired to gather and be social.
The positivity rate at Iowa State in the first week of classes was 13.6%. Week two, 28.8% on a campus that has 31,000 students.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to get sent home. Ohio State sent an email out. Their president sent an email out to the students and the faculty saying them, act as though you are positive going into Labor Day weekend. Basically, you got to behave like you have the virus, Would people change their mind? Would that do it? Because I kind of think that's the wrong message for young people.
What?
I think you got to act like everybody else has it. Those people are selfish.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Oh, I have it, but they don't? Oh, hell with that.
And problem is, so they're going to send these people home, back to their own communities, where they're going to just give coronavirus to the people where they live?
I don't know. I'd look at the two millennials in the room right now, and I want to know, why won't the millennials stop partying? Tell me what it's about. I'm not mad at you. Help me understand, Judah and Alabama Adriana, help me understand, is it that the generation of millennials is going, hey, we're going to survive this? There are relatively low mortality rates for our age. What is it?
It is that feeling of being invincible. There's that. But then there's also, like, this is our youth, and we've been asked to stay inside and not do anything for what's looking to be over a year. And if I was a senior in high school, I would be saying, screw that. I'm going to go out and do what I want because it's my senior year of high school and everybody else before me got to do it. So why can't I? I understand there's a pandemic, but that's just speaking. I'm feeling like how it would be coming from a senior in high school. It is selfish, but that's just how young people think. For me personally, I think I'm out of that age range where I feel like this is my time. You know, that's not really my headspace, but I'm putting myself in my 17-year-old, 18-year-old shoes, and that's where I would be coming from.
Judah Newby.
Well, I couldn't have said it any better. I mean, it is both selfish and the headspace of virtually every senior in high school or every college kid as well. It's incredibly predictable, and I'm in no way surprised that, you know, this is their strategy. You know, when you're in high school, your world is so small. Your perspective is so small. So everything around you that's immediately around you gets heightened. It's more life or death, you know, with each passing day. So it feels almost like personally offensive when you're inhibited with your free time and your free choice. Once you get to college, your perspective expands a little bit. Your experiences get you a wider perspective of the world around you. You know, things like this, it's easier to work through. Your logic kicks in a little bit more. If kids in their senior years of high school or early college, they don't have logic. They're driven by their own personality and emotion.
Yeah, these are college kids. I mean, these are like, and look, I get it. We have a teenager in our household. I was a teenager once. Anna, you were a teenager. We were all teenagers once. When you are that age or in your late teens and early 20s, it is, like Adriana said it really well. I think it's my time.
Mm-hmm.
I still kind of think it's my time right now for me. But I also am aware that I have like a bunch of little people that are reliant upon me that, you know, right before the radio show, I mowed the lawn because I knew the kids would probably want to go out in the backyard. I was like, I better go out and mow the lawn because I'm at, like, that's not really about me.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I'm trying to, you know, take care of my duties here. But I get like, I just.
Well, and think about when you're in your late teens, early 20s, you don't fully, I mean, like, your frontal cortex isn't even like fully developed. So you're not necessarily connecting action to consequence. Like, in an extended way.
Right.
You're still learning. Still learning the impact of the choices that you make. It's why you often get in car accidents at that age. And it's why you do stupid things because, you know, that's all part of, like, your development as a human being. The things that I did between, like, 18 and 22, I wouldn't do those things now. You know? It's just a different mentality.
You jump in a car and you go to Vegas.
Yeah, you know? I'd still do that. Just not right this second.
Yeah, and leave your... Let's go right now.
Maybe this is my time still.
You go like, right now.
Oh, boy.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Make sure you grab the podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. The Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, not here for a long time, just a good time. Mario Cristobal on Tuesday.